There is a strange and quiet force beneath all modern economies. It doesn't produce, yet without it, production halts. It doesn't consume, yet it fuels consumption. It doesn't innovate, yet its absence can stall all innovation. That force is debt. It exists in the shadows of every skyscraper, every factory, every startup pitch and government stimulus. It is a promise of repayment, of return, of a future that justifies the risks taken today. And yet, this promise walks a knife's edge. When made wisely, it is the first breath before creation. When made recklessly, it becomes the first crack before collapse. Debt is not the disease many claim it to be, nor is it the miracle others pretend it is. It is a tool, a mirror, a wager on time. Whether it uplifts or undermines depends entirely on one thing, whether it precedes value or merely imitates it. The credit of creation. There's a foundational truth in modern economies that is often overlooked in popular discourse. Value is not always a prerequisite for credit. In many cases, it is credit that births value. Consider a small entrepreneur, full of ambition and vision, but lacking the capital to execute. They approach a bank or an investor, not with cash in hand, but with a plan, a projection, and a promise. The money they receive is not backed by existing output, but by the belief that the entrepreneur will create that output in the near future. The bank is not lending against current reality. It is lending into a possibility. And this possibility, if properly managed and executed, becomes tangible. The entrepreneur uses the funds to hire staff, rent space, develop products, and market their offering. What once was just a hopeful business plan becomes a living, breathing enterprise, contributing to the real economy. This is the legitimate role of debt, to serve as the advance capital for creation. It is a structured gamble on human productivity. When that gamble is taken responsibly, debt functions as the lifeblood of progress. It allows the future to be pulled gently forward into the present, providing the seeds from which new wealth and value can grow. In this context, debt is not parasitic but generative. It creates an environment where potential can be nurtured into reality. It builds homes, launches careers, funds innovation, and grows industries. It is, in essence, the scaffolding of development. The pathological flip, debt without anchors. But not all debt is created for the purpose of building. Not all borrowing is constructive. When debt becomes disconnected from the real economy, when it is created without regard to whether it will ever correspond to real productivity, it takes on a darker form. This kind of debt emerges not from optimism and planning, but from greed, desperation, and manipulation. Instead of financing new ventures, it props up failing ones. Instead of launching new products, it supports share buybacks to temporarily inflate stock prices. Instead of building new factories, it fuels speculative bubbles in real estate and cryptocurrencies. This is debt as a crutch, not a catalyst. And as more capital flows into these hollow pursuits, the economy begins to bloat, not with true wealth, but with inflated valuations and synthetic gains. Governments and central banks are especially prone to this pathology. When productivity stalls or recessions loom, the temptation arises to simply issue more debt, paper over the problem, and kick the can further down the road. The underlying imbalances are left unresolved, but the numbers on the screen continue to rise. But numbers alone are not value. Debt unmoored from real-world productivity creates a fragile tower of claims without anchors. And the more of these claims exist without corresponding output, the more inevitable the collapse becomes. When too much is borrowed with no intention or ability to repay, confidence breaks and the cascade begins. This is how financial crises begin. Not with the issuance of debt itself, but with the persistent issuing of debt without value creation, until the system becomes a house of cards. Currency, denomination of belief or representation of real value. Every unit of currency in the modern world is a denomination of trust. It is not merely paper or digital code. It is a claim. A claim that the unit can be exchanged for goods and services, a placeholder for productive labor, or a stake in the output of an economy. In a fiat system, where currency is no longer backed by a commodity like gold, this trust is especially delicate. The value of money is not intrinsic. It is relational. It depends on what that currency can command in the real world. And when debt is issued en masse without corresponding productivity, the real value of each unit of currency begins to deteriorate. This erosion doesn't always manifest as hyperinflation or a collapsing currency. Often it appears more subtly. Asset price inflation. As more money floods the system, chasing the same pool of tangible goods and investment opportunities, prices are bid up, not because those assets are inherently worth more, but because the value of the currency itself is diminishing. Real estate becomes unaffordable. Stock valuations lose touch with earnings. Commodities spike. Investors begin chasing yield in increasingly risky and esoteric instruments, not because those instruments are valuable, but because the money itself is losing meaning. This creates a vicious loop. As asset prices soar, wealth becomes concentrated among those who already own assets, while the rest are priced out. Capital seeks refuge in speculation rather than production. The currency becomes a game chip, not a measure of real economic substance. When the monetary system is dominated by debt without production, the currency begins to measure belief, not value. And when that belief fades, a reckoning follows. This is not a question of if, but when. The widespread impact, from micro to macro. The consequences of unchecked debt issuance ripple across every level of society. At the micro level, individuals are drawn into borrowing for consumption rather than investment. Credit cards, payday loans, and zero-interest financing become the norm, not the exception. The average person becomes a debtor not to fund future gains, but to survive present stagnation. At the corporate level, businesses begin to favor financial engineering over genuine growth. Debt is used not to build or hire, but to optimize tax liabilities, inflate returns, or fend off competitors. The focus shifts from long-term productivity to short-term performance metrics. At the macro level, governments find themselves in a permanent state of borrowing, constantly issuing new debt to service old debt. Budgets are balanced on illusions. Monetary policy becomes distorted, as interest rates are kept artificially low to sustain the illusion of solvency. Central banks become trapped, unable to raise rates without triggering collapse, and unable to lower them further without losing credibility. Markets, in turn, become addicted to this perpetual stimulus. Investors no longer analyze fundamentals. They speculate on the next intervention. Price discovery is broken. Risk is mispriced. Capital misallocation becomes the norm. And through it all, the foundational truth is ignored. Real value must eventually back every claim. The price of illusion. There is a seductive simplicity to debt. It promises acceleration. It brings tomorrow into today. But if tomorrow never comes, if the value is never created, then all we've done is borrow against a fantasy. The problem is not debt itself. Debt is a technology of trust. It is an extension of belief in the future and in each other. But like all technologies, it must be used with care, boundaries, and ethics. The moment debt becomes a substitute for value rather than a facilitator of it, the clock starts ticking. Whether through inflation, crisis, social unrest, or economic collapse, that imbalance must correct. And when it does, it will not ask for permission. Debt can build civilizations. Debt can also hollow them out. It all depends on what we choose to do with the time it buys us.